Electric Mountain, each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively on Radio Catskill.
Hey there, Jason Dole here. Radio Catskill's Summer Fun Drive starts Monday. We're already on our way. Go to WJFFradio.org. You can see the progress we've already made towards our $50,000 goal. It's because your fellow listeners have already done their part. And if everyone listening gives something to the weekend, if you give something, we can end this fun drive before it even starts. Do your part. Help us make our goal in record time. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today, well, you can't really get more Catskill-ish than Alan Frischman of Mountaindale, New York, born and raised in Monticello, New York. Both sets of grandparents owned bungalow colonies. His father was a plumber, and his mother, who was an artist, is the person he credits with getting him into collecting things. They would go to auctions together, and he'll tell us about that. Alan is also a musician, an architectural scale model maker, and for 24 years, the town of Fallsburg's code enforcement officer, which enabled him to collect many of the items he'll be talking about today. He's a guy who gets involved with projects like the Sullivan Renaissance Project, Rails to Trails, and the project near and dear to his heart right now, the Catskills Borscht Belt Museum, which hopefully will open its permanent home in Ellenville, New York in 2025. He's also written two books with a third on the way. Lots to talk about, so let's get to it. Alan Frischman, welcome to Catskill Character.
Donna, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
You know, as I said in my introduction, you can't get more Catskillish than Alan Frischman. Let's start by talking about your early years growing up in Monticello, going to those auctions with your mom, and please tell us about some of the treasures that you picked up along the way, starting when you were very young.
Well, she did schlep me to a lot of auctions, and I really had this desire to pick up unusual things. I'm thinking back now, there was an auction in Monticello, and it was the postmaster of Monticello. It was his house. Part of it was they opened up this old garage that hadn't been opened in maybe 30, 40 years, and there were stacks and stacks of Life magazines. It was really opening up a treasure chest. She did take me to one auction up there in Jeffersonville, and I remember she left the room for a few moments, and they put up for auction a post office wall, you know, the little brass boxes. I loved it, so I bought it. Not for a lot of money, and she came back, and I said, Ma, you know that post office box? I just bought it. And she kind of flipped out because she said, we can't even fit it in the station wagon. What are we going to do? And I said, don't worry. And by the end of the auction, people were coming up to me. They missed it, but I doubled my money and realized you could buy things and resell. And that really got me hooked on going to auctions with her and just buying really cool things, and got into that. It still is a great hobby.
Yeah.
I didn't sell lemonade on the corner like some kids.
Right. I think I told you about my friend Steve, who carried a beautiful farmhouse screen door around with him for years till it found its place in his home here in the Catskills. Now, he bought that door when he was young, like you were when you started collecting. You've got to have an eye for it, don't you, Alan?
Absolutely. You really got to know what you're buying, and you got to find the right things. And it's really hard to describe sometimes. You know, people say, how do you find all these things? How do you know what to get? And I guess it was somewhat of my mom's training and my, I come from a family of artists. So I'm always looking at things a little differently than, you know, somebody else. And it just, you got to know what you're buying. And that started a long time ago in my life.
It's almost instinctual when you're that young because you haven't had a lot of experience yet. So it's an instinct.
True. True.
And in doing that, Alan, you really saved a lot of Catskill history, didn't you?
Fortunately, so many people are thankful that I did years ago, starting to collect these things, just because to me, they were just, in some cases, really cool looking things. And I'm not just talking about the common ephemera in the papers and the this and the that, but so many other little tchotchkes and just some really cool items that are completely gone unless somebody stayed at that place and they grab something and they have it in their possession. But it took that, like you said, it was an instinct to save these things.
Mm. You know, it's interesting because kids nowadays, you know, say like a 14-year-old, you hand them a princess phone, they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how it works.
I have kids that come to my house and they don't even know what a phone booth is.
Oh.
Okay, the young kids. And I say, this is where your parents cry to your grandparents that they wanted to get out of camp and please pick me up because the food stinks and I want grandma's cooking.
Yeah. And, so are you telling me you have a phone booth?
Absolutely. An old oak phone booth from the Aladdin Hotel in Woodburn. I was able to grab that.
Wow.
Actually, there was two, but I traded one at an auction hall.
All right. So you've got this thing going on. You're collecting stuff, collecting treasures. And you were also a musician. In high school, you started playing in bands, right?
Yeah, that was really, really special. In the beginning, I have to say that my band was awful because we really didn't know how to play, except we played at one of my grandparents' bungalow colonies, and my grandmother loved it. And the kids were like, you guys are awful, and da, 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 and she was being very defensive. The next year when we played there, finally, we knew how to play. It took a year. And they saw the difference. Those were great years in my life in high school, being in a band, playing Sweet 16s. We started playing in Kutcher's in Monticello. We did a stint there. Then we went to the Pines in South Fallsburg. I think I was going to college already at Orange County when we started playing at the Homowack. So playing in the hotels was a real joy. And listen, our job is also, we had to socialize with the young ladies. That's what part of the job was. That wasn't allowed by the waiters and other people, but it was our job to be social. They wanted that.
What kind of clothes did you wear?
Hippie clothes. In the beginning, my mom bought us outfits. It was called the New Generation. And I remember she bought us Nehru shirts.
Mm.
We all wore two blues and two red ones with jeans. And then bell bottoms. Bell bottoms were just coming out, and we all had a pair of bell bottoms, and we wore them to school, I remember. And man, were we ridiculed. It was unbelievable. Like, what are you wearing? And about 2 or 3 weeks later, everybody started wearing bell bottoms. She was really ahead of the curve in fashion.
Wow.
And a lot of things. So I'll never forget that.
You became, thanks to your mother, you became like a trendsetter. And I'm imagining that being in a band and wearing these clothes, it had kind of a cool factor for you, right?
Yeah, I didn't grow long hair until later in school. It was okay in my family. And you know, it's funny because I once said to my dad, listen, Dad, I got good grades. I don't do drugs. I'm a good kid. I don't get in trouble. So let me have long hair. And he said, yeah, that sounds okay.
Oh, I love it. I remember in those days, I would go out of the house, you know, I'd have my hair parted down the middle, you know, hanging to your waist. And my mother would always say the same thing. You're going out looking like that? Very encouraging. Okay. What did you do after high school?
Well, I did go to college. The band was still working on weekends. And actually, I was going my third year of school. I was going to Syracuse University, and I got the band to come up to play in one of the cafeterias or something. Mm-hmm. And that was great because I kept telling my friends, I got a great rock and roll band, you know, and finally I brought the band up to college, and that was a pivotal moment. You know, it was just great performing. And they said, wow, you really are a good guitarist. And the band sounded great. And I love that. So college was 6 years I went because of transferring and other things. And
You went to a couple of different schools and you undertook a different course of study in each of these schools, correct?
Well, I started in architecture here in Ock, And then I went to Syracuse University for architecture, and I just had a bad year there. It just wasn't flowing for me. And one of my roommates said, why don't you come to the School of Forestry and study landscape architecture? And that really, I finally found my fit. That was a great program. And it was extended because one semester we had to leave the country. They wanted you to experience culture shock so that when you came back, you were designed for people, not Americans, so to speak.
Ah, where did you go?
I went to Sevilla, Spain.
Ooh.
And there was a couple other boys that were in Costa del Sol, and two others were in, I can't remember where anymore, but we used to take little side trips to visit each other. It was fantastic. It was a great, great experience.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I talked about in the introduction that your father was a bungalow plumber, and I promised the listener that you would explain what that is.
Just to clarify, he was a real plumber. I was the bungalow
plumber. Oh, you were? Okay.
I mean, he knew how to fix everything from boilers to heating to whatevers. He just taught me to be a plumber, what I call the bungalow plumber, meaning that you had to fix everything to work for 9 weeks. That was the summer, because you got to remember, the water was turned on. We got it going. You know, during the first 2 weeks, there was rust in the pipes. You had to bang the pipes out to get them to work. And then 7 weeks later, you're turning the water off. So things couldn't be fixed permanently. Part of that problem was because the bungalows were built on not even foundations. They were just built on the ground. So things were always shifting and the pipes were always breaking. And so I was a bungalow plumber. And I, you know, every time I came home from college or high school, whatever it was, I helped my dad and my brother, you know, and he had helpers. And I was a bungalow plumber. So for me, that was a little different than a legitimate plumber. He didn't want me to be one.
Now, is that bungalow plumber, is that your creation?
I think so. I've never heard anybody else say that, you know. But for me, I was what I considered a bungalow plumber. I knew how to fix leaks, and I knew how to make the waistlines run downhill.
Mm-hmm. You even wrote your first book is entitled Tales of a Catskill Mountain Plumber. So I guess you talk a lot about the things that you encountered when you went out on a plumbing job.
Yeah, I mean, that book is some personal tales about plumbing. There's a lot of tales about my family growing up, and there's some really funny stories. And there's some other stories from people that worked or had businesses up here. And then there's a whole chapter dedicated to the Woodstock Festival.
I got to get that book. In fact, speaking of Woodstock, you told me that your mother drove you to Woodstock, and your car was chock-a-block with everything you could possibly need, unlike most of the people that were there.
You know, one of the things I did growing up with my friends was I was in Boy Scouts, so we knew how to be prepared, and I had gone camping and stuff. So when it was time to go to Woodstock, and we already got our tickets, we packed the van with everything, you know, food, blankets, flashlights, everything we could imagine. But it was the van was standard, and none of us drove standard yet.
Oh.
So she drove the van. I followed her in her car. We set our campsite up, and my brother, who was only 13 at the time, wanted to go. And my mom said, "You watch your brother, right?" I said, "Sure, Ma." But I didn't really have to. He hung out at the hog farm, listened to a little bit of the music with his friend, but he had a great time. We had a great time. And then at one point when we were setting up the campsite, she started directing traffic. You know, people were driving into the field and everything. And somebody came over and said, "Lady, listen, if you don't drive out with that car, you're staying here with your kids all weekend. So you better leave now." So she took off, and what an experience that whole weekend was.
Yeah, and what an experience growing up in your family, such a tight-knit family, doing so many things together. It really sounds wonderful. Let's take a quick break here, Alan, and when we come back, I'd like you to tell us about your current passion, okay?
Sure.
This is Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and we'll be right back.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting, because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York. riverreporter.com, and from listeners like you.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, we talk with a curator of some of the world's most interesting facts.
Fondue was invented by the cheese industry.
What he has uncovered may make you look at your physical surroundings in a new way.
The entire notion of how we interact with a street being changed by a marketing campaign feels amazing to me.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio, Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time, you go strolling through the crowd like Pete DeLorean contemplating a crime.
Back in the 1960s, the Scottish singer Al Stewart shared a London flat with a young Paul Simon. Next time on the Wacky Load of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we hear the songs and the singing of Al Stewart. Join me, please, for the music of Al Stewart on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition. Weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just joined us, speaking with lifelong Catskill resident Alan Frischman. Alan grew up in Monticello, New York. As a musician, he performed everywhere from Kutcher's to the Pines. Both sets of grandparents owned and operated bungalow colonies. Alan's dad was a plumber, and he worked with him during the summer season when the Catskills were in full swing. His mother, an artist, collected things she picked up at auctions, and Alan, who almost always went with her, developed a passion for found treasures that he began to collect. Where did Alan put all these things? In the second half of the show, we're going to find out, so here we go. Alan, you loved finding old signage, for example. Tell us about some of those signs.
Luckily, I got a job working for the town of Fallsburg in 1987 as code enforcement officer. There were thousands of remaining derelict buildings. Part of my job is to remove them. I had to do a report for the town board, but part of it was taking photographs and documenting the condition of the building before the town could do anything. And I'd walk in and I'd see something, whether it was like an old sign, furniture, didn't matter what. I just knew that this stuff is historic. Mm. And something said, you got to save this. So that's where a lot of my signs came into play. I'd go into a building and I'd see tchotchkes. I remember finding things from the Olympic Hotel, keychains. I grabbed, you know, a couple of them. I didn't realize then it was pre-eBay. Other people wanted these memorable items from the places. My job afforded me the ability to go into a lot of abandoned properties and find things that I saved. Thank God.
Now, where did you store everything?
My house was pretty in a disarray. And then when I met my wife in 94, she slowly forced me to begin to organize things and set things up. Things just fell into place. Even my ephemera now exists in albums instead of just boxes of postcards, you know, like a shoebox. Mm-hmm. And people don't expect that when they come into my house. I think it's going to be like a hoarder's house, but that's why my house is really a mini museum.
Right. It takes a good woman, Alan.
You're absolutely right.
Take us through a stroll through your house.
Well, even before you walk through the front door, there's some artistic items right on the lawn. Like I have a bottle tree with different colored bottles. I do steampunk art. So my bird feeder is got gauges and stuff all over it. And then when you come into the front porch, there's a beautiful hand-carved door with an incredible etched glass pane. There's a very old slot machine. Then when you walk in, the first thing most people see is the row of old soda bottles. I've lost track of the count, but the top shelf runs about 28 feet of just different colored soda bottles. That's what I like to collect. And there's, believe it or not, the original barber chair that I got my first haircut in.
That is crazy.
So I have the only remaining theater seat from the Lyceum Theater that was in Woodridge. I had about 30 of them. They were somewhat destroyed, but I said, for all the effort it took to collect these, I'm going to restore, reupholster, and have one in my living room. Maybe that would be one item eventually that might leave my living room.
So I'm guessing that in 2025, when the museum opens in Ellenville, a lot of your collection will leave your home in Mountaindale, or at least some of your collection, and make the trip to Ellenville, right?
Some of it. There'll be enough that the museum that I will loan, and there's still items that I have in my sheds, like vintage TV sets. I have two of them with the old rabbit ears. I'm sure one of them, actually, I think one of them might go into the museum for next summer for the pop-up, because we want to change the exhibit around a little bit.
I don't want to get too political. This is not a political show, but I feel compelled to say that once again, we've been made excruciatingly aware of all the anti-Semitism in the world. But what's relevant to this story is that the Borscht Belt came into existence because Jews were banned from upscale hotels and beaches around New York City.
The Catskills
offered a refuge, not only from the heat in the city, which everybody, you know, loves to say, oh, it was the heat, but it was a lot more than that. It offered a refuge from anti-Semitism. Wasn't the Four Seasons, that was a bungalow colony, wasn't that bought by Holocaust survivors?
Absolutely. Kind of a unique situation that they all came from that same background. But when they came here, these people were all able to purchase their own bungalows. And I can't imagine the stories that they told when they would get together. A lot of people that I've spoken to did not talk about it until later on in their lives. Then they felt they needed to share it. But you're right about Jews not being allowed. As you drove the old 17, when you went through Tuxedo, there were signs that specifically said no dogs, no Jews, and no consumptives. Finally, some farms were bought by Jews, and they thought they'd become farmers, but they realized that the soil was terrible up here. So instead, they created boarding houses, and that led to hotels, and that led to bungalow colonies. And after a while, this was the Jewish paradise. This was a place that Jews knew that they could go. They weren't going to be ostracized. They knew they could relax. They would have freedom. And that's what made the Borscht Belt so popular.
Yeah, the Yiddish Alps.
The Yiddish Alps, there was the Sierra Sour Creams, there was the mountains, the Catskills, the Borscht Belt. I know I'm missing a couple more, but everybody had a little nickname for this place, but it was an unbelievable period. It was a slice of Americana that we're trying to preserve in the museum. People cannot believe, unless you show it to them, what happened here. They can't believe there were that many hotels and bungalow colonies.
Did you ever see that movie, The Blouse set? Was it Blouse?
Yeah, it's called Walk on the Moon.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, and that was a good movie because it was, you know, there was the contest on how fast the guy drove from the city to the mountains without getting a ticket, of course. And that was filmed, I believe, up in Canada, but it was the likeness of that bungalow colony was similar to so many down here. And the Blouse man was just one of many of the vendors. There was the meat trucks. You'd get meat deliveries from the local butcher shops. There was the famous Dugan's Bakery and Madnick's Bakery trucks. And, of course, the icon of all the vendors was Ruby the Knish Man. And anybody that stayed up here in a bungalow colony remembers Ruby the Knish Man. He was a character. Everybody loved him. He was actually a friend of my family's after a while, because anytime something broke, and if my dad happened to be at the bungalow colony where he was delivering knishes, he'd say, hi, listen, this hinge broke. Do you have something for me? And my dad's plumbing truck was like a Home Depot on wheels, so he'd always try to help him out.
The Catskill Borscht Belt Museum is slated to open in 2025. It's in a bank, by the way, in Ellenville. You had a pop-up show, which is like a taste of what's to come at the museum. How was the response to that?
Overwhelming. Everybody says, it's about time. We need this. I'm so happy you're preserving this part of history so that my kids, my grandkids, can see what I experienced. Now, right now, as you said, what's in the museum is a simple pop-up, but it was a miracle that we bought the building in the middle of April and we opened the museum July 1st. People were amazed that we were able to do it in such a short time. Plus, August 1st, we had our Borscht Belt Festival in conjunction with the museum, and Ellenville was hopping that day. That was the first festival we ever had. We had at least 4,000 people. And ever since the museum has opened, and we're sort of tracking our attendance every weekend, and we're open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're averaging 25, 30, 40 sometimes a day. There's just this continuous flow of people that are hearing about it through social media. Many magazines are talking about the Borscht Belt now. There's a revival and mentioning the museum. So it's like it's beshared.
So exciting. You've also written a second book, which is More Borscht from a Catskill Mountain Plumber. And the third one's on the way. People come up to your house. Your house is like a museum, and you bring them through and you tell them about all the different things that are on display. And then at the end of the quote unquote tour, you have a table with your books and you sell your books, which I think you're a smart cookie, Alan.
That's my entrepreneurial skills again.
Yes.
But, you know, after they go through the tour, and they hear me talk and tell stories about every item, and I go through the property. It's quite unusual. There's other things that have nothing, well, indirectly have to do with the Borscht Belt. I built a boardwalk and pathways in my woods, as I did when I was a kid. Mm. And it bisects a blueberry bog. So if they come up during the right time of year, we're all picking blueberries, and they go, oh, that's when I was a kid. So, yeah, at the very end, it's like, so this is my gift shop, and here are my books. And if you're interested, oh, yeah, you know, usually I'll get the first one, you know, and I'll read it, and I'll get the second one on Amazon because they are available there. Mm-hmm. And second one, which is More Borscht from a Catskill Mountain Plumber, is really many, many more stories from people that I've interviewed and have spoken to me since the first book came out. And I kept saying, you know, somebody would tell me a story, not the ones, oh, my uncle met Jane Mansfield when he worked there as a busboy. No, these are funny stories from people that are unique. I won't get into them, but there's probably, I think, about 60 vignette stories from people. There's still a couple family favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, which is gefilte fish for the soul, I hope maybe this winter I can put it together when I go down to Florida and try to relax. We'll see if that comes to fruition or not. I'm not sure.
Well, Alan, it's been so much fun having you on today. Do you have like a website for the museum or something we should let the listener know about?
You can go to the website CatskillBorschtBeltMuseum.org.
Okay.
And you can go to alanfrischman.com if you want to contact me. And you can even email me at mountaindaleboy@gmail.com. But the abbreviation for Mountaindale that I use is MTDALEBOY.
Okay.
Just like my license plate, Mountaindale number one.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today with me. It's really been a joy.
Thank you for having me, Don. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
You've been listening to Catskill Character with my guest, Alan Frischman, author, musician, collector, and archival curator of the Catskill Borscht Belt Museum, due to officially open in 2025. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs in the 10:30 time slot. Tune in then for more stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
My name is Mark, and I want to tell you about my show. It's called Ambient Barn, and it's a curated deep dive into the expansive world of electronic music. Each week, we'll showcase a particular genre or theme. Everything from the early pioneers to the latest underground artists, trends, and microgenres. So plug in with me Sunday night at 11 p.m. because the coolest stuff always happens late at night. Tune in Sunday night at 11 p.m. only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
the surprising history of how country music got a much-needed boost from the Pentagon during the Cold War and became coded as patriotic in the process.
You have Uncle Sam, arguably the most powerful promotional partner in the world, pushing that onto the airwaves.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.